Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Get in on all the sports action and your chance to win up to 100 times your cash with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 long seasons of exile in the National League. Dedicated staff and passionate supporters celebrate the city's return to glory, the big time, all while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in that higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One's promised land? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
It's Friday. It's Rog podding, energised by my first trip West Coast post-pandemic, my first journey of any kind from home, to be truthful. And I went to Los Angeles for a slew of reasons, some of which will become evident soon. And it felt remarkable to travel, to reconnect to human beings, to places that have only really existed on Zooms and in my imagination. You know, it was devastating to see how some true institutions like Nate and Al's have fared over the past 17 months. But the highlight for me was to drink a beer with two people I've long admired and just sit there and talk utter crap with them. It's fantastic to see Tommy Vitor and Mina Kimes, who are two remarkables. I take my hat off to both of them. I mean, they're both honestly hate compliments even more than I do. Just chatting with them, someone tweeted that listening to me and Mina pod together was like the Federer and Nadal of avoiding compliments. But they have both spent lockdown, and I can tell you this because they can't dodge this, creating deeply meaningful wells of content that has sustained millions of us, and posting the photographs on Twitter and Instagram of me and them. I think people laughed. It looked surreal, like kind of pod crossover wonder. But I will say, to me, they're photographs of two special, special human beings, and to be in their company is to be nourished. One quick word on my bookity book, Reborn in the USA. One of the joys of releasing that book is part of the reason that I enjoyed popping into Los Angeles was to be able to support America's indie bookstores in doing so. You guys have been incredible. So many of you have gone out your way to support indie bookstores when you bought my book. Keep sending me the photographs of whatever indie stores you have been buying from, because to me, indie bookstores are so much more than bookslingers. They are centers of creative community and sources of ideas and of dreams that really better the towns and the cities that surround them. So I am beyond thrilled to be able to partner with that jewel of an institution in LA, BookSoup, and appear in conversation with Nick Kroll, co-creator of Big Mouth. It's August 4th, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. The links are all over BookSoup's website, on my Twitter. And I'm going to talk about autobiography, about creativity, about adolescence with Nick, who is, of course, also my real-life brother-in-law. So no matter where you are in the nation, sign up, come and join us, raise a glass. You just have to sign up for a specially signed copy. It's got a beautiful limited edition, hand-numbered, hooray for Hollywood book plate. And in buying it, you'll support BookSoup more than I can say in the process. We're also giving out 5 prize packages to thank those of you who bought the book for your immense love and support. You can win one of those beautiful limited edition starter jackets. There's only 20 in the world. I want all 20, but I'm going to give 5 away. Just send me a photograph of you with the hashtag Reborn in the USA, wherever you are enjoying the book in the world, and you can win. So Godspeed, but let's do this. Sting me up.
That your job is to come in here and blow our mind.
That is a throwback, Sting. Paul Carr Blows Your Mind remix. I remember that from old school GFOP, Sir Yves Torran. And this is WGFOP The Bald, the show where you call in your questions at 646-450-9472, 646-450-9472, and I half-ass the answers like all of Qatar's opponents in the Gold Cup. WGFOP The Bald is proudly presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, and we're talking Tokyo this week. Here's the deal. Place any pre-event wager of $1 to be eligible to cash $100 in free credits. If America, and I know it's hard to imagine this, wins any medal this year, that's 100 to 1 odds on an American athlete to stand on that podium and receive gold, silver or bronze. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code MIB, MIB when you sign up to turn $1 into $100. Hooray for Hollywood! In free credits, if America wins a medal, that's code MIB, MIB to turn $1 into $100 in free credits for a limited time. Only DraftKings Sportsbook, which is 21 old NGI and APA. Only new customers, under 16 and place. DraftKings.com/sports for details. Gambling problem? Come on, 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-INDIANA, 1-800-LINE with it. Let's question it up.
Hello, Raj. This is Tyler calling from Zeeland, Michigan, on Michigan's beautiful west coast. This question concerns the U.S. women's national team and the men's national team. One of your criticisms of the men's national team is Greggy Ball's persistence of trying to play through presses, playing it out of the back, when we should maybe be a little bit more direct. After watching the women's national team this morning, I'm wondering if, with the talent that the women have, should they be trying to play a little more Greggy Ball, playing through the back with their talent and breaking the press, as opposed to being so direct and always trying to pump the ball forward? Do the national teams need to switch coaches? Courage.
Hello, Tyler. Hello, Zealand. Old Zealand. What a question. Look, I'm as befuddled by the US women's slow start to their Olympic journey as pretty well anyone. First up, let's celebrate Sweden. This was not just a terrible US performance. Sweden were so bloody cohesive as a collective. More than anything, tactically, they were so brave, and it paid off time and time again, because that game was a biblical smiting.
Jakobsen again, lovely ball onto the onrushing Hannah Glass towards the side of the penalty area. The deep cross, Hurtig 3-0. Lena Hurtig with the header. And Sweden are taking Team USA apart here in Tokyo.
And for the US women, I have to say this, they're back-to-back World Cup wins. This defeat, the style of it, the experience, the spectacle, only made me appreciate their achievement more, because we cannot take victory for granted. You know, the 1990s, early 2000s, US football was so far ahead of the rest of the world because of Title IX. No one else had anything like it. And so the US just had an incredible head start, a trout farm of young, dynamic, able, deeply athletic footballers. No one else could come close. And if you look at games from back then, the US would just bludgeon all comers. They would, you speak to the players, they would say, we ran over our opponents. We out-athletic them more than anything. Just absolutely flattened them. But we talked a lot on this show about how just the leaps and bounds women's football has taken across the world in the past decade. You know, a game that was déclassé around the world. It really was. It was outlawed, honestly, in many, many places. I grew up in Liverpool. It wasn't outlawed. Liverpool, there was football mad. But back when I grew up, the 1980s, if you were a girl who wanted to play football, you were derided. It was football played so deeply on the periphery by outliers. And now, it's really been one of the most joyful stories of my lifetime to watch how the English Lionesses are the nation's pride and joy. because the Women's League is flourishing in England, as Women's Leagues are across Europe. And the European Women's Game in particular has benefited both from the financial investment of the biggest teams across the continent. If you watch Barcelona's women's team, you will see that. But they've also, and this is more cognizant for your question, they've benefited from the technical and tactical know-how that exists in Europe, a level of coaching that surpasses what exists in the United States. By the way, that statement holds true for both the women's and the men's side of the game here. It lags the thinking, the understanding, just the culture of coaching in Europe. So when you speak, for instance, to US players like Sam Mewis, when they go and play in England or Spain or France, they are shocked at the tactical acumen, the tactical conversation, the tactical, just the strategies that are basic in the way club teams set up over there. And the story of US women's football the past decade has been that of a massive head start being slowly winnowed away by the English, the French, the Brazilians, the Japanese, the Spanish and more, which is ultimately a great thing, right? It's ultimately better for the women's game. The Sweden result is better for the women's game that there's not just one big bad American team crushing all comers. And over the past 10 years, US soccer has been explicitly trying to evolve the women's national teams game, make it more tactically savvy. So the players are not just running less athletic opponents over, but they're outpassing, they're outthinking, they're outplaying them. Jill Ellis talked a lot about this before 2019, and we know it worked.
Helped on by Mewis to Lavelle, the game's opening up. Rose Lavelle, lovely run, great goal! Brilliant goal! Rose Lavelle might have won the World Cup for the United States! For the fourth time, the United States of America are crowned champions of the world.
So this Swedish beatdown, proof, yes, we're living in strange days, one in which our US women are merely mortal. Let's say it's been some run, 44 match unbeaten run shattered by a smackdown against an undaunted foe who handed out a footballing lesson. We look shocked. We look shattered. We looked old. And the statistics are startling. This loss was the team's first in 24 games under Vlatko, first against any opponent since January 2019, worst major tournament loss since 2007. And I've watched this team play badly. In spurts, in moments, in halves, but not for a whole game. Megan Rapinoe summed up the defeat honestly. She said, "We got our asses kicked, didn't we?" And the reality is, this loss was not so tactical, which it was, but it was a mental loss. The US were that bad. And the good news is the tournament structure is very forgiving. There's plenty of time to turn this round, starting with tomorrow's game against the Lady Ferns of New Zealand Saturday. Worst New Zealand accent ever. 7:30 a.m. Eastern time on NBCSN. And what's fascinating, this US team has not been shut out since 2017. It rarely has to deal with adversity in game. Never mind adversity at the final whistle. They do not lose. This team barely goes behind. So how this squad responds to this humiliation will be illuminating. Sweden may either have exposed the weaknesses, the fault lines of this aging squad, or merely given them a wake-up call on the march to glory. Next question.
Hi there. This is Ernesto from Chicago. Diehard Chicago Red Stars fan and card-carrying member of the Local 134. Greatest supporters group on the planet. Long-time listener, long-time tweeter, first-time caller. Here's the thing with all this talk about international play and tournaments that you've been doing. I have a really important question for you. Which is the most evil soccer cabal of them all? Is it FIFA? Is it UEFA? CONCACAF? CONMEBOL? One of them is truly the most evil of them all. And I can't decide. What do you think? I'll hang up and listen.
Ernesto, hello Chicago. By the way, next Friday I head back to Chicago, Illinois, my spiritual hometown. I'm going to pitch, I hope, 6 innings for the White Sox next Saturday night, which I couldn't be more excited about. I'm also taking my elder, Samson, to the city of my dreams for the first time ever in his life, and I couldn't be more excited. Chicago looms so large in my heart, and as readers of Reborn in the US know, in my journey, and to take a kid back to that place, it's an incredible feeling. Any dining suggestions you Chicagoans have, please send them away. And your question, Ernesto, is a good one. I mean, ultimately, football is such an exquisite game, but the level of corruption, the level of greed, just the awful people that are drawn to the administration of the game we love. See Super League, it's one of the things that is truly sickening to me. You know, and asking which is the most corrupt federation, it's like asking who's eviler, Vlad the Impaler or Ivan the Terrible? It's impossible to measure just that human darkness. And the game on the bureaucratic side has been left to rot and be overrun by dark forces across the board. FIFA, terrible, UEFA, awful. But as your question hints, I do believe the less scrutiny these federations have, the more terrible their corruption appears to be. See Jack Warner, see Chuck Blazer, CONCACAF, my God, the darkness. Hence you get things like this Gold Cup, which continues to slop its way below, way below America's sporting radar this weekend. The ill-conceived, barely marketed tournament can't stop, won't stop. With its slightly erratic kickoff schedule, quarter-final time, Mexico face Honduras tomorrow, 10 p.m. Eastern time, and the USA C team face Jamaica Sunday, 9:30 p.m. on FS1. And if I was a betting man, I'd slot lots of cash on Qatar, continuing its charm offensive to worm its way into CONCACAF's affections. You know, I can barely remember the US men playing a tournament with less buzz. And we talked on the podcast this week about, to me, the team owing CONCACAF nothing. And I do believe we have to play the long game for the good of the future of the sport on the men's side in this nation. And to grow the game's profile with the American viewing audience who will tune in or not tune in. And also with the quality of our national team. This is more important to me as a collective. These players need to play against the best as an international team, like they now do on Juventus, on Chelsea, on Dortmund. They need to play together against Argentina. They need to play together against Brazil. They need to play against Uruguay. And they need to play against bloody good teams when it's not the World Cup, or we will wilt under that pressure time and time again. Our men need to be playing one tournament and one tournament only, and that's Copa America on the regs. Question me up.
Hey, Raj, this is John from Ventura, California. I just had a question about grief in football and how you process grief, because it's a very unique kind of grief. It seems like it's not very important at all, but also hugely monumental at the same time. I went into the Euros with England. I was kind of on the fence of who I was supporting in the final there, but towards the end, I was definitely for England, and that heartbreaking loss, it just left me very sad. Just wanted to hear your thoughts on processing grief as an Everton fan and very well versed in that. So, courage. Talk to you soon.
John, oh man, what a great question. You know, as Jadon Sancho officially signs for Manchester United and Emile Smith-Rowe pens a new contract for Arsenal, moves which have both of those teams' fans feeling like hope renews again. And Everton signs, oh my God, a glut of players. Andros Townsend, Damari Gray and Azamir Begovic, who might have helped the club maybe come mid-table in 2015-16. All while dealing with a sex offending case which has not been handled very well. I mean, it's awful. It is. It just feels like the heart of darkness. And so you're asking the question at a very good time. I actually chatted to Mina Kimes about this the other night, and she asked how I cope with all the losing that my teams do. And my first response was to say, look, Mina, I'm dead inside. Nothing can hurt me now. I've lost so bloody much. After this moment, nothing can hurt me.
It goes into the penalty area from Alexander Arnold. Mina with the header, a wild volley from Van Dijk. It's awkward, and it bounces off the crossbar and into the net. Would you believe it? Divock Origi has scored the winning goal in the 96th minute in the most bizarre circumstances.
The double doink that knocked the Bears out of the playoffs came right after this, and I have to say, I was mentally ready for it. Do your worst, sports gods. You can no longer harm me. But in truth, the England thing, try to focus on the positives. That this young team, this brave young team, this positive, emotionally intelligent team, they carried themselves so well. It was awesome. And a little bit, I'll be honest, of me didn't want to have England lose that failure side of their footballing identity. I love it, but I was shocked to see how hard my own kids took it. It took them days to get over the devastation, especially my second son, Bear, who really feel things. He's away at camp. He watched the game, told me the loss. Seriously, he told me this. Took him a, quote, week to shake. And I think about it this way. First of all, I'm grateful to sports for letting us feel things at all. Good, bad, wonderful, dark. Because to feel human emotion is to feel alive. Something I never take for granted, to live. Never underrated. And second, I look at sports as a way to connect me to other people. To share these memories and feelings we will never forget and forever be bonded by. And I love watching Everton and the Bears and the White Sox because, mostly because they connect me to my family, my dad, my kids, as a vessel of shared memory. And what's important to remember, really, at the end of the day, is that the athletes are human. How they think about, how they experience both victories and defeats, that is a million times what we feel deeper, deeper, deeper in every way. And I say that as we're about to release a couple of Olympic films we made with our friends at Coca-Cola. And one is about Kelly O'Hara, an athlete I admire so much. The other is about Stephanie Labbé, the Canadian goalkeeper who saved a penalty so heroically in the Canadians' opening game. Stephanie, she's just a remarkable human being. She's an elite goalkeeper who's willing to talk about the battles against depression she's experienced after moments, and this is most key, of defeat and moments of glory. And I'm going to leave you with some words from Stephanie from the Cope film, which will be released later today. Please listen to them. It's beautiful. It's human. It transcends sports. I think listening and understanding will make us all better human beings. Here she is, Stephanie Labbé. And this is Rog saying, come on, USA. Godspeed, US women. I'll be back on Monday. Until then, courage.
My name is Stephanie Labbé, and I'm a goalkeeper for the Canadian women's national team. Started training with them 8 months before the Beijing Olympics and was ultimately named an alternate. Went to Beijing with the team and was definitely a background singer at that time. 2008 definitely left me wanting more. 2012 London was a much different experience. Leading into that game, I started to go through some personal battles. I was at the point where I was starting to correlate my self-identity and my value with playing time. And because I wasn't getting the playing time, it decreased my perception of my own worth. I was in such a dark place that I really struggled in daily happiness and daily joy. That's when I really started to know there was something bigger than me that needed attention. I made the decision in February of 2012 to step away from the national team. It felt like I was giving up on my dreams. How I had to rephrase it to myself was, I'm not giving up, I'm just prioritizing my mental health and my own joy. I actually traveled to England to watch. That was really challenging to manage the emotions with that, but watching them win bronze was where I got my closure. I was so happy to see them win, and I was so confident that I had made the right decision. But at the same time, there was this drive and this fire that was lit inside me, wanting to be down there on the field with the girls, wanting to be a part of the next one. 2016 Rio Olympics, I definitely approached that tournament with a completely different mentality. Leading into the games, there was a bit of uncertainty in terms of who's going to be the starting goalkeeper. When it was clear that I was a starter, there was a lot of doubt in terms of, like, can Steph do it? She's never played on the world stage. I had to eliminate all that distraction. I didn't want to have my confidence waver because of someone else's thoughts and feelings. In Rio, the Canadian team won bronze again. I was just free, and I was so confident, and I was so relaxed. It just felt like I was exactly where I was supposed to be. The Canadian team's mindset going into Tokyo is, we definitely want to go higher up the medal podium. We're sick of being on that bottom step. We want to get ourselves into that final and give ourselves the opportunity to win gold. for me in the position that I'm in towards the end of my career, it would just be this beautiful wrap up of this incredible journey that has had so many ups and downs. The most important lesson that I've learned, we tend to connect with each other more on the lows and the hard times. And we really realize the more we talk about it, how many other people have gone through those experiences. And it helps you feel not so alone. It helps you gain that community of so many other people that are going through such similar challenges. That's what can bring you out of those challenges, talking about it, connecting with people, not feeling so alone, and then continue to grow towards the win.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.